Montgomery Chidane, I'm an addict. First, I want to thank the Montgomery County area for thinking enough of me to ask me to share on the topic, and the topic is motivation behind service. I didn't even have to think about it. Okay, so what I'm going to do first, I'm going to talk a little bit about me. My parents didn't raise me to be an addict. So I like to hear people talk about the before. We have a lot to identify with before addiction. So I am the oldest of three, and my parents were good parents. They were hardworking people, you know. My mother was a hairdresser. You know, they call them stylists now. She was a hairdresser. My father worked for Eastern Airlines, cleaning airplanes, and he drove a cab. So when folk got home in the evening, you know, it was time to get a bath, get your homework, get your dinner, get to bed. It wasn't a whole lot of hugging and all that. It wasn't none of that happening in my house. I can't remember my mother hugging me or my father for that matter. But, you know, it was a good childhood. You know, we had food, we had clothes, we had shelter. You had to go to church. You had to go to church. And you had to go to school. We went to North Carolina the day after school closed and didn't come back till the day school opened. The day before. So, you know, it was a good childhood. My father and mother, they did the best they could. You know, my father was a strict man. You know, he was about protecting his children. He had two girls and a boy, and the boy came a long time. He was protecting the girls, so we couldn't do anything. You know, and I used to say I hated my father because he wouldn't let us do nothing. Go to church. Go to school. We was in the Brownies. And we was in the Girl Scouts. But you couldn't do nothing else. So anyway, my father died when I was 13 years old. And my life changed immediately. Not immediately. About 2 years after. My mother, she went in the morning. And she was in mourning for about 2 years. She tried. She tried to, you know, have us involved in things. I was in a drum and bugle corps and, you know, things in school and stuff like that. But, you know, she just assumed that I would do the right thing. You know, but see, them folks that my father wouldn't let me be with, I was still watching them. You know, and I still wanted to be like them, you know, because I was a long, tall, skinny gal. When I was coming up, I ain't have none of the bumps that the other girls had. So the boys, they wasn't looking at me. So I'd be with the girls that the boys were looking at, and I'd be sitting around watching them and everything, taking notes. You know, so what happened was this girl that, I'm going to tell you what first happened. First happened, alcohol, I just couldn't get with that. I couldn't get with that. But this girl that I liked, she lived upstairs from us. And I used to go up her house after school. You know, door was always open, never locked. And I'd go in and I'd just sit and watch her. She always had a guy up there with her. And I'd just sit and watch her. One day I went upstairs and she was braiding the guy's hair. And they were sitting there, and I noticed all the stuff on the table, but I didn't pay no attention. I was just watching her braid his hair. So after a while, they finished, and they got up, dipping and dabbing, doing the do, you know. So she said, "You want some? You want to try?" I said, "No, I won't try that." She said, "What you scared?" So, you know, I tried it. I tried it. I didn't like it. I got sick. You know, I went home, I went to sleep, I slept for the rest of the day, you know, and I said, I will never do that again, you know. So what happened was, this boy I met, And he said I was cute. And I fell in love. You know, so always my story is whatever Boo do, I do. So Boo was doing the do, and I did too. So immediately I was a bum. Immediately. It didn't take no whole lot. Because I was in the 12th grade. Once I started using, was in the 10th grade first. I was in the 10th grade. I didn't find it necessary to go to school anymore. I went to school, but only to use. You know, I finally, you know, they're passing me still. And I made it to the 12th grade. And I got pregnant. And I dropped out of school in January of the 12th grade because I had some great sponsors. They told me if I dropped out, I'd get my own check. So I dropped out of school and commenced to being a bum in my mother's house, taking advantage of my mother, you know, who was the sweetest woman on this earth. Okay, so, you know, at that point in my life, it was all about me, and I used to have this famous saying, I know nobody never said this, I ain't hurting nobody, why y'all gonna leave me alone? You know, but I come to find out I was hurting everybody. I had a child, but see, drugs were more important. You know, I'd leave that child and my mother, I'd go do what I do. And I would come back every now and then. My mother never changed the locks. She always had food and she took care of my child. You know, and a lot of times I was there physically, but emotionally I wasn't available. You know, I started getting in trouble with the law. You know, I always get a program or get probation, and I never do the right thing, but I'm going to speed it up. In 1979, I went into treatment. And I went into treatment not because I was looking for a new way of life. I went into treatment following the Boo. So when I went into treatment, they had so much information. And for those in treatment, I know you haven't done this, but listen anyway. When I went into treatment, they had a wealth of information for me. But I picked and I chose what I thought was best for me. Because, see, I always knew what was best for me. You didn't know what was best for me. And when I went into treatment, because people were different, younger, different color, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, how you gonna help me? How you gonna tell me what to do? So anyway, I left treatment. 18 months later, the same person that I was when I got there. You know, some things had changed. You know, I was taking a bath every day. I got my GED, you know, and I thought I had it going on. You know, I said I wasn't going to use again. All those women that I had bonded with those 18 months, I threw all of their phone numbers away. I said, I'm not going to use again. I don't need them. So I never went back to the facility on Fridays for the meetings that I was supposed to go to because I thought getting a job was more important. You know, getting a job, getting with Boo, you know, getting with Boo, you know. And so what happened was I got a job or you couldn't tell me nothing. Once I got that job, I just knew I was, you know, I was fine. Got a job and got with Boo, got a place, and, you know, within a year's time, I was using again. You know, got in a program. Methadone is a big part of my story. You know, a lot of people against methadone, but methadone saved my life. Methadone kept me from going too far, you know, and so anyway, when I started using, it took me 13 years to get back to a place where I would become willing to let somebody help me. You know, because people tried to help me for years. You know, my mother, she tried to help me, the judge, the counselor, but I wasn't having it. You know, so I got to the center where I had to yearn. Well, I always had to yearn, but I could always switch. This place, you couldn't switch. They tested for everything except for marijuana, so that cut that out. Because, see, I had a job, and I thought it was important for me to keep my job, so I had to get my methadone. You know, so anyway. I had a counselor, bless her. She wasn't beating on the table telling me what I needed to do. She shared with me what she did. And that's why this program worked so well for me. Because we share our experience, strength, and hope. Okay, so she used to tell me stuff like, I deserve better. I was like, why she keep saying that? What she want? You know, but she wanted for me what she had for herself, and it was a new way of life. So she convinced me. I had to be convinced to come off methadone because it was my crutch. It was my crutch. I couldn't do without it. I don't care if it was 4 milligrams clear pink water. I had to get there and get it. Every day. I used to go on trips and they'd plan a trip. You had to go someplace out of town, they have a trip, you know. My uncle died in Newark, New Jersey. I had to go cross the water somewhere over there and get my meth, and I went over there before the funeral. I wasn't going to no funeral when I get my meth. You know, it was sad. And I was caught up in the grips of on a government medication. So anyway, and that was, for me, the disease of addiction. It was still, for me, a drug, you know, because I couldn't function without it. So anyway, they scheduled me to go into detox because once I came to a certain point in my detox, I said, I need to go to the hospital. Because I just knew I was going to fall out and die when I would come to zero dose. So anyway, they sent me over to DC General Building 12. And I thank God for that woman. Because, see, I was so afraid. I was so afraid to let that thing go. But she had more faith in me than I had in myself. And I went. But I'm not telling y'all that I went over there saying that I wasn't going to do anything anymore. I smoked a joint on my way and put half of it in the ashtray and said, that's what I was going to do when I got out. But see, God had another plan for me, and I didn't know. But what happened was when I went to detox, I went over there and I listened. I sat up and I listened to what the people were saying. D.C. area and east of the river, H&I subcommittee. And if you don't know what H&I means, H&I means hospitals and institutions. They brought meetings there every day except for Sunday. Now, I'm not going to tell you I understood a whole lot of what they were sharing. But what happened first was a young lady came over as the speaker. And I recognized her. And she was someone that I knew in my travels in the street. But she wasn't looking the same. She didn't talk the same, and she definitely didn't smell the same. And that was the attraction got me first, the attraction of this program. So it was the 4th of July holiday that I went to detox. And so on the 4th of July, the chairperson brought 4 guys with him to do the meeting. And they say they had left their cookout to come and do that meeting. I was like, they left their cookout. Oh my God. So, you know, what happened was I made a commitment to myself, not to my mother, not to the child, and not to Boo. I made a commitment to myself that I wanted something different. You know, and they told me exactly what to do to stay clean. They told me when I left, they said before I left there to get the basic text, the basic list, to find a meeting on the list that was near my house so if I didn't have any money, I could walk. When I got to the meeting, raised my hand, let somebody know that I was new. They told me to pray every day. Help somebody every day, even if that person was just myself. They told me to get a sponsor and first and foremost not to use. I followed those directions when I got out of detox. I went to a meeting that was near my house. It just so happened to be at a methadone clinic that I had frequented for years. I got to that meeting and there was a guy at the door, the greeter. And I was so surprised to see him. I thought he was dead. I hadn't seen him in 3 years. He had 3 years clean. You know, he took me to the coffee pot and we sat down. At the secretary's report of one of those meetings, because there were multiple meetings in that facility, this woman announced the D.C. area H&I subcommittee's monthly meeting. And after the meeting, I got with her. And I told her I wanted to do that because see, H&I had made an impression on me when I was in detox, you know. And she told me where to meet her and all this and the requirements of the clean time, you know. And I met her. So eventually, within 30 days, I asked that woman to be my sponsor. She told me all her sponsees was on H&I. So I'm gonna talk about the motivation behind service. Initially, my motivation behind service was because my sponsor told me that I had to be in service. She told me I had to be on H&I. You know, but I was willing because I had gotten this feeling when those people came to detox, they ignited something within me that made me want something different. Now, I would go to the meeting with her. She had a meeting over at DC Jail at one of the treatment programs, and she did that meeting every Monday religiously. And I went with her and said not a word for 6 months. I got there before time and I stayed. Okay, he gave me the 5 minute mark. Okay. Today, my motivation for behind service is service keeps me clean. When I got here, somebody was here for me, and they motivated me to continue to stay, to be in the place where I am today. Motivation behind service. If people were not in service, where would I be? And it's the same thing. If we are not in service, where would the newcomer be? We keep this thing, it's like a conveyor belt that just keeps going around like that. We bring them in, that's how it works for me. I have met so many people in service. I have people come to me to hug me. And I'm going to tell you, I'm getting old. I don't remember, but it still motivates me. You know, I've been on H&I in August. It would be 24 years. You know, and I am in service because my first sponsor, Sandra Hardy, I can say her last name, God rest her soul. She was a service person. And service is just so good for me. And if you get something behind me being in service, because service keeps me clean. Service keeps me humble. That's a big deal for me because I can just get sometimes just out of rages. you know. But service keeps me humble. And I want to be here for the newcomer, for the old timer, for the person that's just in pain, because there are so many people in this room that have been here for me, and they are in service. We are in service to each other. Just being available, you're in service. Just being available. So I guess my 5 minutes is not up. Okay. Okay. So, but what I would tell the newcomer, I must share my experience with this, what has worked for me to keep me outside of self is being in service. And being in service in the rooms of Narcotic Anonymous has helped me to be in service to my family. Because, you know, when I was out there, I wasn't in service to my family. I mean, when something happened, more than likely they couldn't find me.
Right.
You know, so the program, meetings, conventions are places where I learn how to live. And a part of me being able to live outside of the rooms is being in service to my family and to the community. And I want to thank you all for letting me share.